Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage co-founder and CEO of MoneyConf and Web Summit, Paddy Cosgrave. Damas y caballeros, por favor, den la bienvenida. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage co-founder and CEO of MoneyConf and Web Summit, Paddy Cosgrave. Damas y caballeros, por favor, den la bienvenida al escenario al cofundador y CEO de MoneyConf y Web Summit, Paddy Cosgrave.
You're all very welcome. That's incredibly loud. That was also very awkward coming up on stage. So I'm going to tell you a little story. My primary interest is three large technology conferences that we run. Web Summit in Europe, RISE in Asia, and Collision in the United States. Together they'll bring together more than 100,000 people this year from the technology sector and many other sectors. Web Summit brings together tons of heads of states, ministers, CEOs of many of the largest non-technology companies in the world. MoneyConf takes place internal to all of those conferences. And a number of years ago, somebody internal to the team asked, could they spin out MoneyConf and run a small standalone conference? And I thought, you know, why not? And it's always been a curiosity to me. I think it's interesting. My primary passion is these very large conferences. But something piqued my interest a number of months ago, because the guys from Money 2020, who to me are absolutely crushing fintech conferences, if you haven't been, you should absolutely go, approached us to buy out what we were doing in the fintech space. And that was the first moment I thought, hold on a second, if these guys are absolutely crushing it, why would they need to take us out? And yeah, so yeah, I'm just going to go and just make MoneyConf a little bit more antagonistic, maybe a little bit better. We're going to bring it to Dublin. We're going to do the part that we're particularly good at, which is moving this event from a very small invite-only event to a much larger event, also adding or retaining at least an invite-only component for about 200 of the leading figures within fintech. And we're just going to go and see what happens. Whilst I'm all for consolidation, and you'll hear from many large banks today who are primarily for consolidation, I think a little bit of competition is a healthy thing. If you haven't used the app, it's quite good. It's a reasonable app to use. Your recommendations will constantly update based on the interactions of everybody else here. We read your address book. If you haven't connected it, you should connect it. It's the most powerful graph we all have, and that will help serve up better and more personalized recommendations to you. And throughout the day, roughly every 30 seconds, your recommendations are being modified based on every message somebody is sending to somebody else, every profile that is viewed, every talk that is favorited or added to somebody's schedule. So it's quite powerful. So we've got a fantastic panel to kick things off. This time last year, this next panel gathered, exact same panel, gathered to consider the UK's impending vote on membership of the European Union. As you all know, Brexit won, and the UK has already begun proceedings to leave the European Union. 1 year on, what do we now consider as being the true implications of this historic vote? Please welcome in the company of Bloomberg's Ed Robinson, the director of Consult, Hyperion, David Birch, and the co-founder and CEO of the fantastic TransferWise, Tavid Henricus.
Buenos dias. How's everybody doing? Welcome to MoneyConf. It's a pleasure to be here. My name is Ed Robinson. I'm a senior writer with Bloomberg News. I cover fintech in London and have kind of watched it develop over the last couple of years. Today we're going to talk about Brexit and the impact on the fintech community. And I'm joined by Tavit Enriquez, the CEO and co-founder of TransferWise, and David Birch, a consultant with Hyperion and Soothsayer, I understand. So a year ago on this stage, right at this time, it was only a couple of days before the referendum on Brexit. And it's a little eerie to be back here now on this stage talking about Brexit a year on, and there's another election, a general election, that's coming this Thursday, which could have enormous impact on the whole startup scene and, of course, the economy in the UK. The question I think we'd like to address this morning, 1 year on from Brexit, from the referendum, is this historic decision going to ruin the tech scene, not just fintech, but the startup scene in general in London, in the UK? Tavit, what do you think?
So I think you're right to point out that this is much broader than just fintech. I think overall we are talking about, is UK the best place for high growth businesses? Like, you know, if we look in the past 5 years, UK has cemented itself as a global leader for fintech. You know, also I think when you think about the kind of the startup scene in general, then definitely the best place in Europe. But now if we're looking forward, you know, there is so much uncertainty in the air today that it's kind of very hard to predict how things will go. You know, one of the key things for any high growth business is talent. You know, I'm an immigrant myself. I came to London from Estonia. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're looking at what's happening now with the election, and one of the big things is immigration. If we're going to be cutting down immigration to levels that they talk about, people won't be coming to London, and that's going to impact all growing businesses in a major way.
Now, a few weeks ago, you were speaking at a conference that was hosted by the Treasury and the Ministry of Trade in the UK, and you said that if you were starting TransferWise today, you wouldn't choose London. Is that because of the reasons you just said?
Yeah, I mean, talent, and then the other one, which is fintech-specific, is passporting. So Europe has this fantastic regime of financial services passporting. If you're regulated by one regulator in one member country, you can provide your service to all of the countries, which is pretty amazing. You compare that to US, where we have to work with a regulator in every state. Right. So that's pretty cool. And, you know, if you think about passporting and all the great people that London has, it makes great sense to be based in London. But if you're starting today, I think there are many more choices. You know, there is the uncertainty in London doesn't make it that exciting anymore.
David, what do you think? Is Brexit, we're a year on, we've seen 12 months of action here. Is Brexit going to spoil the tech scene?
Well, I agree with the main point here, which is about people. So in the long run, I'm unconvinced that Brexit really matters. Like, in the great scheme of things, does it, you know, the EU probably won't last forever anyway. Does it really make any difference whether it breaks up in 5 years or in 50 years? You know, like, in the big picture, it doesn't really matter. But businesses don't like uncertainty. People don't want to invest in uncertain environments. And it's undeniable that we're going to have a few years of chaos coming up while we negotiate all of these myriad new agreements. That must happen. But for fintech, I think unless the government does something really insane, like not agree to the passporting of EU licenses, I mean, that would be an obvious thing that the government should do. Unless the government does something really insane, London will continue to be the centre because it has the momentum, it has the infrastructure, it does have a regulatory environment which is very conducive to innovation. But I agree quite strongly that the thing that can mess it up really has got more to do with people than the regulatory environment, because the regulatory environment is very positive and beneficial.
The you talk about people and hiring talent and how critical that is. In the circles that we move in, when we talk to startups, we talk to entrepreneurs, we talk to people who work in these companies, and there does seem to be this level of anxiety in some of the startups in the London scene right now, especially around
hiring and should I stay in this country? What's going to happen if I'm an EU national? How potent is that? I mean, how do you deal with that as an entrepreneur, as a founder of a startup?
So anecdotally, we can definitely see that the number of people who are applying for jobs in UK coming from Europe has changed. You know, people, you know, when it used to be that, you know, we get applications from all over the world, and so now it seems that, you know, people in Europe are applying less for jobs in UK.
Really?
And similarly, I mean, the people working at TransferWise, you know, we have in our headquarters in London, we have half of the people who aren't born in the UK. So these people are naturally worried about what's going to happen. You know, I believe in common sense in the end, so I think the government isn't going to kick out the people who are in the country now. But for anyone who's thinking of moving to London in the next year, it's not such an easy choice.
The government, after the election, the government can move quite quickly to end this. So I'm sure what the government will say is that no one's going to get kicked out, or, I mean, that's never going to happen. But they have to say that however they construct it, we have to have an immigration policy which will allow those skilled people to come in. Otherwise, we have a big problem. But unless the government's really stupid, they will, of course, do that. But there is that psychological aspect to it, which if people think that the UK is becoming more closed and inward-looking, then that might... Because the people in this audience can work... I mean, I should say, by the way, the people in this audience aren't the people who voted for Brexit, right? So the people in this audience, if things go wrong in the UK, they'll just go and work somewhere else. They don't care. You know, these are people who could work anywhere in the world. They're not the people that voted Brexit. And the people that voted Brexit, their issues still need to be addressed. I mean, merely voting Brexit isn't going to fix anything for them. So in 4 or 5 years' time, when the people living in Sunderland still aren't making steel, or whatever it was they did in Sunderland, and we haven't kicked out all the Romanians, those people are going to get really upset, right? Because Brexit isn't going to fix anything for them. So it's not like the issues are all gone away just because we voted for Brexit. But in the fintech space, it's about people. The regulatory environment isn't going to change unless the government's crazy.
Yeah, and, you know, similarly, you know, I think about TransferWise, you know, we're going to hire these people anyways. Whether we hire them in London or Berlin or Singapore is a different question. So, you know, I hate to say that we're a mature business. We're not a mature business, but, you know, we can survive this no matter what.
Right.
But if you are a five-person startup, then maybe an easier choice is to take all the five people you get on a train. But the thing about immigration, I mean, you're right, David, it is far from being solved. But I think the other challenge, which isn't really spoken about, you know, if you think about maybe it's a less skilled immigration, I can't see British people who want these jobs. You know, we go back to the Polish plumber, and, you know, if there weren't Polish plumbers, then the toilets in UK wouldn't work. And I can't see the British people wanting these jobs. So I think there's a disconnect.
Well, it's not that... You need refreshing. So the point is, when the Polish plumber has been in the UK for 4 or 5 years, the statistical evidence shows he becomes just as lazy as British people are. So unless you... No, it's true. So unless you have new immigrants coming in all the time, you don't get this energy. And in cities like London, and by the way, it's not really the point of this discussion, but I personally, I have a very city-centric view of the future. I mean, I think the competition isn't between the UK and France and Germany. The competition is between London and Paris and Frankfurt. And the mayors of these cities have great powers. So maybe that's another way moving forward, right?
But David, why are you so confident that the government, let's assume that Theresa May and the Conservatives win on Thursday, why are you so confident that they're going to pursue an enlightened approach to immigration? In other words, that they're going to reverse all of the rhetoric that we've heard in the last year, which has been quite tough. And if I might add, in the manifesto that the Conservatives put out, they have vowed to reduce immigration from hundreds of thousands to tens of thousands.
No, that's net migration. So
right.
they vowed to get net migration down. But we can do that by getting rid of lots of people. So, for example, one of my ideas is, if you can't import low-cost workers from, let's say, Romania to work in care homes, then why don't you just move the care homes to Romania? Because that way we could export lots of old people, and then the net migration figures would come out. So it's... No, I'm not joking. You've got to be more creative about these solutions. If I was old,
you're
going to
get a ministry.
You're going to
get a ministry out of this.
I want to be moved to Barcelona or somewhere where it's sunny and lovely. You know, so the net migration figures. There's two sides to this, and the government right. can be creative about both of them. But when it comes down to it, they're not in sight.
Mm-hmm.
So you might have to dress it up in some odd ways to keep the voters happy with these migration figures. But the government isn't going to drive out business. The big banks aren't going to leave London and go. London is still the number one place for trading. Well, everything basically. I mean, yeah, we're number one.
The big banks are taking space in Dublin. They're taking space in Frankfurt. They're looking at. Clearing of euro derivatives could move to Paris. I mean, there is movement there.
Look, if I move half a dozen people to Paris just to comply with some regulatory thing to do with clearing, it's not going to really affect London. I think the effects are going to be limited. I really do.
And for all of the anxiety around immigration, around the hiring issues and so forth, looking at the economy of the UK, I mean, it has slowed down somewhat, but it certainly hasn't gone off the cliff the way many forecasters had predicted when Brexit occurred. There's been some inflation. The economy appears to be resilient. Won't that kind of trump the fears of a lot of entrepreneurs and founders, startup founders, and say, you know, yeah, London, it's a little uncertain, but business is uncertain. We still need to be in London.
It's the economy, stupid. But the UK, look, most of the people in this audience would say the euro doesn't make complete sense. Because the economy of Germany isn't the same as the economy of Greece. So it seems odd to have the same money and the same interest rates and that kind of thing. But that's true within countries. The economy of London is not the economy of the rest of the UK. And the fintech scene is London. It's not the rest of the UK.
Right.
So actually, if you look at the overall figures, you see growth not where we would want it to be.
Yeah.
But that's not evenly distributed. You know, we've just seen Google announce their massive new headquarters in London.
Right. Apple as well. Amazon's putting up a new building. Yeah.
So when you're talking about the fintech scene, you're talking about London. TransferWise are not going to go and set up their offices in Sunderland. In the newspapers yesterday, HSBC are trying to bribe workers, £2,500 each, to persuade them to go to Birmingham. And Birmingham's only, what is it, like 50 miles away or something? I mean, it's not that far to Birmingham. You've got to pay people £2,500 to go to Birmingham. God knows what you'd have to pay them to go to Newcastle or somewhere. So the economy of London and the economy of the UK are actually quite different issues. And fintech depends on London, doesn't it? Not the UK as a whole.
But Tavit, does economic factors, how does that play a role in your planning?
So, I mean, obviously, if the economy is going well, then I think that makes everything easier. But I would... You know, I'm not an economist, but you know, if you think about the sterling exchange rate, you know, I would guess we'll see inflation keep on going up, and maybe the economy. You know, we've also been in a great run in the economy worldwide, but I think we're also getting to a point where this great run might come to an end. You know, there are cycles in the economy naturally, so you know, we'll see what happens when the economy turns.
Speak, if you could, about just the development of other hubs in the continent. We know that you're contemplating that you'll open a European office, some kind of headquarters on the continent at some point in the future. This is kind of precipitated by the Brexit situation. Is it possible that other cities, Paris, Lisbon, Madrid, might develop kind of counterweights to London as a result of this?
So I think David was right to point out that the competition is about cities, you know. We really should be talking about the top 50 cities worldwide. These are the cities competing for talent, for business. And I think that you know, the world in that sense has become way more competitive than it's ever been. You know, cities don't set the tax rate, but you know, the kind of the tax structure in a country, how great the place a city is to live, these are all huge factors. We've opened TransferWise in Australia, US, Japan, Singapore over the past years. And what we've seen is that there is a huge fight for the fintech capital of the world. You know, every city from Sydney to Singapore tries to be the fintech capital of the world. And I know London is that and probably will be for a bit more. But I do think that other places are catching up. You know, so they're looking at what the UK regulator has done. They're copying these moves, you know, whether they work or not doesn't matter. But, you know, inevitably, for every follower, the job is much easier. So if you think about this going forward, you know, UK has to keep on innovating, okay, in order to keep the lead. Otherwise, other people will catch up and they will pass. You know, if we think now about France, you know, I think Paris will become a much more exciting place. Yes, it's going to take time for them to figure their things out. But we will be seeing much more competition. There will be many more tech capitals of the world.
I think we're moving into a situation where the mayors of those cities, like the mayor of London, the mayor of New York, they're becoming very powerful people. And so it's quite right that now regulation tends to be on a national basis. But there are other things that can be done on a city basis. There are always tax deals that can be done to move people in. And most of the talent that we're trying to attract, I mean, those people want to live in those big, vibrant cities, don't they? I mean, they're not moving to the UK, they're moving to London. London has become a very cosmopolitan and international city, and that's what makes it attractive to other people. So even if the UK has some issues to do with tax rates and whatever, you know, London will still be vibrant. I do want to say one other thing about the competition, though, because there are cities. I mean, I think if you look at places like Berlin, Paris, I mean, they do see themselves as competitors to London, but maybe in slightly different areas. You know, I mean, I've certainly heard people say that Berlin has very strong engineering talent. You know, Berlin perhaps can be the centre of... And so one weird thing you might see is that some subsections of fintech go to other places, and then the UK becomes the home of regtech instead, because it's the regulatory innovation.
So there'd be this kind of segmentation then, you think, could take place?
Well, yeah, because the point about the continuing innovation is a good point, but that doesn't necessarily mean technology. You know, this is to do with things like sandboxes and open banking and
That is one of the great ingredients in the London fintech scene, has been this kind of enlightened approach that the Financial Conduct Authority and other regulators have taken. Ruth, do you have that clip of David, last year on this stage, you spoke to this issue on the regulatory scheme in the UK. Let's hear what you had to say.
Did I? Okay. Did I say anything bad?
Well, you were talking
about a specific issue around fintech and financial services. So for historical reasons, the UK regulator has been in the forefront of trying to change the regulatory playing field to make it easier for competitors and new entrants. So the UK government is very focused on more competition, for example. And so because of the passporting of those UK more liberal regulations, London has become a focus for fintech, inward investment, creativity, innovation. And actually, I think that would be at risk post-Brexit, because it's quite likely that another regulator, possibly the Irish regulator, for example, might decide to move to have that more liberal regime
to bring people in.
So the UK regulatory regime has had direct impact in boosting London as a financial services sector, and that would definitely be affected post-Brexit.
Yeah, and actually I think I was right to say that, because I think there other regulators around the world have been looking at London and London's model, and there are other places now that are adopting the sandbox and this kind of approach. So you see what I mean? You could see that there are fintech centres that begin to spring up, and then London moves ahead in regtech. And actually, if you look at the cost bases, particularly of the larger banks, those cost bases are much more tied up with the cost of regulation
than they
are with the technology. So if it turns out we can have some innovation around KYC, AML, CTF, PEP, that in itself could be more important. Yeah, okay, so the Germans have got a few good programmers. So what? It's the cost of KYC that's the problem for banks.
As a founder, as an entrepreneur, how important was the regulatory scheme in the UK to setting up shop there? Did it play a big factor in your thinking?
Absolutely. I mean, as I said before, having passporting and having an innovative regulator. So I think the FCA to date is still the only regulator that has innovation as part of its mission. But other people are very busy. You could even argue they might be busier than the FCA today. You know, what Singapore is doing, There's a lot happening.
As is the European Commission. They've undertaken a major...
Yeah, and they start
and
by copying.
Singapore's got the blockchain as well.
They start by copying, but, you know, they get the momentum of innovation, and, you know, who knows where they're going to go next. And maybe UK is going to be copying them. So it's the question is, you know, if I think it's going to be hard for the FCA also to swim against the tide. If the tide in the country is not about this, then, you know, how far can the FCA push it?
You mean it'll be kind of isolated?
Can I just make one? I just want to make one big picture point. So 150 years ago, there was a thing called the Latin Monetary Union, the LMU, right? It was another crackpot French scheme like the euro and things like that. And they had a silver-based common currency. And Spain joined and Italy joined. Lots of countries joined the Latin Monetary Union. Greece joined. And then they got thrown out a bit later on for not obeying the rules. So, but the Latin Monetary Union lasted for 60, 70 years. Mm-hmm. And then it broke up and went away. And nobody in this audience has ever heard of the Latin Monetary Union. And it doesn't matter. You know, and in 100 years' time, we'll be having a money conference and people will be saying, hey, do you remember when we had that, what did you call it, the United something, United States? And we don't have that anymore, ever since California went. And then we had, like, the EU. Remember we used to have that thing called the EU? Like, in the great scheme of things, it doesn't matter. And 100 years from now, it's going to be all about cities. Well, for those of us that have left, the rest of us will be on Elon Musk's rocket to Mars to get the hell out.
The lucky ones.
But for those of us that are left, it's all going to be about cities.
Are we going to have the United Kingdom?
No, I'm against the United Kingdom now. I think the United Kingdom was a good idea in Napoleonic
time. David, the scenarios that you're describing are not good for business. I mean, you're describing...
They're all good for business. Like, what business needs is we need competition, we need regulatory space, we need innovation. That's got nothing to do with whether you have a UK or not, right?
But in the shorter term big picture, what you have is, to get back to the point on the FCA, here you have this enlightened regulator that's kind of plowed the ground for startups like TransferWise to take root. They've done such a good job that they're now exporting this model to other regimes. But they're increasingly going to be isolated if the rest of the country, politically speaking, is closing off. Is that your point?
I think for business to bloom, you need certainty. So, and you know, you need to come back to a useful time frame. You know, 100 years is a great long-term perspective, but in 100 years' time, we're all going to be dead. It's about the practical time frame, which probably is 2, 3, 4, 5 years, having certainty.
I can get Estonian e-residency right now, right?
Estonia
is tiny compared to London. So in 10 years' time, you'll be able to get London e-residency, I promise you. It's all about Lexit. It's all about getting London out of the United Kingdom as soon as possible.
Right, but the bottom line is Brexit going to be beneficial to the London fintech scene or not? And Tabit, your position is...
Beneficial, not.
Not, okay.
I think David? It doesn't make any difference unless they do something stupid with immigration.
Okay, now... as I said, you're a soothsayer. On this stage, I think last year you predicted that Remain... Actually, he predicted Remain would win unless it rained. And did it rain on June 23rd?
It rained. There were cars floating down the street. They had to shut the subway. It rained so much. So I just feel... I'm not embarrassed to say in front of all these people, but I have some power.
All right, so Thursday, general election.
I'm connected.
Give us your prediction.
I think the incumbent government will win. I think the people that voted Brexit, who historically voted Labour, will most likely vote Tory this time. So I think no big surprise.
But will Theresa May get a larger majority or a smaller one?
I think
she'll
get a larger majority.
A larger majority?
Yeah.
Okay. So then you think she'll have the flexibility to make the deal that the fintech community wants?
Well, the deal that the fintech community wants is to leave things alone. You know, we leave the passporting in place, allow us to import skilled immigrants where we need them, allow us to continue with the FCA and the regulatory sandbox. So what the fintech community wants is for them to leave things alone. And they're going to be so busy negotiating banana quotas from the Caribbean, they won't have time for the fintech stuff anyway.
Okay. Well, we shall see after Thursday's election. Please join me in thanking Tavin Enriquez and David Birch for talking us through the Brexit process.
You're a good debater. Good to see you. We're following you.
Okay.
Fantastic. Around the world, 3 billion people are left out.